Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining our weekly podcast for Startup Pulse, under which today is the series on Investor Spotlight. And I have my good friend Mahendra Naik from Toronto, Canada. He's the president at First Angel Capital Inc. And here today on the podcast, he's going to share his stories and his expectation from startup founders and his theory of investing. We are going to make it very lively. As a follow-up, you can also put your questions here when you hear the podcast, and we will do a follow-up round with Mahendra. So with that, welcome to you, Mahendra, for coming to the Startup Pulse Spotlight.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I think it's a fantastic opportunity to talk about startups, not only in Canada, but all of North America and the world, from my perspective. So delighted to have this conversation and share my experience and thoughts. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mahendra. And for the audience, Mahendra and I are also part of a global organization for entrepreneurship called TAI. And we are TAI chapter members. So just wanted to tell you about that. Mahendra, tell me, how did you get into angel investing? What happened? How did you start?
Okay, so let me step back. So I come from a business entrepreneur family. My father, my uncle, they were all business people. They were all entrepreneurs, and they started their own business. In a lot of respects, out of necessity. They didn't have the professional the families back then did not have the means to pursue education and all that. So, you ended up launching and starting a business out of necessity and help out with family matters and that. So that was the fundamental motivation in our family, okay? It was not a sort of an off-the-cuff choice or whatever. It's something that one had to do, okay? And that's what my father and my uncle did. And quite frankly, I learned from them, okay? I observed them, what they did, how they did, and that. Not only building businesses, dealing with customers, but more, just as importantly, dealing with employees, okay? And that, there's a certain philanthropic, giving, supporting aspect to the, my father and my uncle building their businesses, okay? They develop loyalties a lot of different ways, okay? And fundamentally, looking after people was one of the fundamentals, okay? Doesn't matter what stage of life or where they're from or whatever, if they needed support, my family usually found a business solution to provide that support.
Okay? Right.
Okay. So it's a business driven help as opposed to pure charity.
Okay? Right. Yeah. And because that way you are not supporting that entrepreneur, but you are also creating an ecosystem. One, when he or she will start making money, they will start investing back and, hiring more people. So you are, in a sense, a job creator. You are right. Doing charity is very easy, and charity has its own merit. I'm not discounting that, but at the same time, if you could be a player in the ecosystem and create entrepreneurs, they are the best thing that you can do to help the world today. I'm glad that you are doing that on that. How long have you been doing angel investing?
Okay, so I would say my angel investing probably well over 35 years, okay? And let me tie back to my experience. I'm a CPA, I worked with a big accounting firm, the Big Four. And in my experience, I dealt with a lot of founders and entrepreneurs, okay? All right? And, although I've got a professional accounting designation, I was more of a business accountant, you had to do the audit work and some of the accounting work and tax planning and all that. But I was more driven by the business, the client. How does this business work? Whether it be real estate, financial services, or whatever. Okay. And, as a result of my role and interest, I got a lot closer to founders or the senior executives of my clients. Okay. And the interaction, the active engagement, albeit in the context of doing an audit or providing a professional service, was very enjoyable because I learned more about their business and what I thought and what they shared, you know, and how they're successful and all of that. Okay. And quite frankly, you know, you know, unless if you're part of a business family and you grow up and you get the benefits of different parts of the business, there's no better than some professional services, including being a CPA. You get exposed to a variety of different industries, businesses, and individuals, and by and large, mostly entrepreneurs. Okay. Yeah. Sure. You know, you do have some big clients, public company clients, but even then, you deal with senior executives and they're running larger organizations and that, you know. And one time in their life, they may have been entrepreneurs and launched their business and whatnot. Okay. So that gave me a very good taste of entrepreneurship and investing. Okay. I also, you know, had a lot of clients who were in the investment business. Okay. You know, advising individuals, also investment bankers, you know, raising money and all of that. So that gave me an exposure to capital raising and structuring capital pools for the purposes of investing. A lot of it for investing in public companies, but some of it also private companies and whatnot. And the people behind these investment structures and companies are entrepreneurs, right? You know, I mean, if you look at it, the last 30 years, the whole investment industry has changed. You know, it's much larger, much bigger, and there's a variety of elements or categories within that. Okay. Today, investing is not just buying shares in a publicly traded company. Yeah. Investing, you know, it also involves in private companies in that. So that gave me the exposure. The other one was, you know, I joined one of my clients, who's an entrepreneur, very interesting client, okay? Here's a client that did not finish high school, okay? Wow. Okay, he used to tell me, he says, I got my MBA from the streets, okay? Yeah. School of Hard Knocks, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, till the last investment that he made, okay, that I oversaw, or we made and I oversaw was, you know, he never looked at a spreadsheet.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The investment was by gut instinct and a good common sense, street sense. Hey, is this business going to work? Are people going to buy this product or service? Okay. So as a result of being involved with a family office, gave me direct exposure to early stage and angel investing. Okay. Typically, the idea came in through the door as a connection to the founder of this family office, but I got involved because I was a CFO and let's call it the chief investment person and part of the, you know, whatever diligence we did, but more importantly is managing that investment, including interacting with the founders and all of that. Okay. So that was, you know, I did that for, oh, geez, well over close to 25 years. Okay. And right. Some companies, some investments turned into public companies, very successful companies in their own right. And that. So the full spectrum of being involved right after a founder walks in you in the door, you know, screening their ideas and all of that, and then working with those founders, in some cases taking a greater interest and building up larger businesses. Now, I mean, it was not all successful. You know, some of them we took control, shut it down. Some of them we took control, sold it off, etc. So that, I would say, and my public accounting experience were the dominating, and also my family background were the dominant forces of looking at entrepreneurship and investing, okay? And then since I left the family office, you know, a number of years ago, and in the latter part of those years, I also became a co-investor with what they were doing, okay?
Sure.
Okay, because I'm usually the frontline person. So I continued with that practice of selectively, somewhat opportunistically, investing in that, you know, the narrative or the theme or thesis, if you want to call it, of what I do is early stage, you know, and kind of ties into the name of this company, my investment company, First Angel. Usually,
First Angel.
So, you know, you're not the founder, you're not a family member of the founder, but typically, I would say in the last 30 years, the investments we've made were usually the first outside investor, okay? And some of these are at an idea stage, okay? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, most people won't even listen to it, let alone invest. Okay.
So,
strong connection with early stage businesses, ideas, and more importantly, founders. Okay. Because at that stage, and let's face it, at angel investing is really a good bet on the founders. Okay. And their ideas and their ability to execute and build a business. Okay. But goes back to the founders. So a lot of experience in dealing with entrepreneurs and founders, variety of backgrounds. There were no explicit requirements and, you know, very agnostic towards gender and ethnicity. At the end of the day, what motivated me and us and motivates me is this a good idea? And are the founders, can we work with them? You know, that's the fundamental. I mean, it may sound so simple, yet it's very important, okay? You know, one should not look at the absolute dollar of your investment. You know, I look at it more than that, okay? All right? And again, most angel investors, as you know, Anshuman, are entrepreneurs themselves. You know, the money that, you know, some may have inherited, you know, through family and whatnot. But most of the ones, angel investors I know, have earned their money, either their business or whatever, okay? So why am I saying that? The value of angel investing and the dollar that an angel investor brings is very powerful and can be very impactful if things and the conditions work out, okay? And, you know, what's somewhat underappreciated and not fully recognized is that the dollar that an angel investor brings, you know, you also get the person behind that dollar, okay? You know, my suggestion, advice to entrepreneurs is, okay, not all of them have a choice in who they take the money from or take the investment from, but also understand who's behind the dollar, okay? You know, it may not be much. It may not be a big name VC or private equity or one of these entrepreneurs who's now a billionaire or whatever, okay? And that, you know, has its own cachet and value. But also understand this person who's behind this dollar. You know, it's a kind of a two-way street. You know, founders and entrepreneurs are getting an investment from this person, but you're also taking on this person's money and all their experience. Okay, so the value of an angel investor dollar, arguably, Anshuman, is worth more than a dollar. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to, you know, there's a process, there's a time before, you know, that is, so going back to, I look at the founders, you know, is there a fit? And the fit, you know, we can define fit a number of different ways, okay? But more importantly, can you make an impact? No, you're not going to make the business. You know, there are some rare situations where an angel investor will make the business, but can you have an impact? You know, is your dollar and your time associated with your dollar impactful? And that's the process one has to go through. It's highly subjective, okay? It's not something you can put it on a spreadsheet, okay?
but you know, each one of us who are in the angel investing world have to, decide that, you know, how they see the market and, you know, what they want to do. I completely agree with you because my investment philosophy is also, you know, who the founder is. How passionate that founder is, because I feel, and you know, after running a startup studio, you will pivot. So even though they come up with an idea, and you know, you are an idea stage investor, your angel group name is First Angel, so you are writing the first check, other than the family and friends. You know, they will pivot. The market will demand them to pivot. But then, is the fire in the belly of the startup founder or not? Are they really passionate about it? And I'll tell you what trick that I generally adopt and, you know, run with is asking them to present at late in the night or very early in the morning. Are they willing to do a presentation at 4 a.m. their time? You know, that tells me that, you know, how hungry they are. Are they really, you know, interested in, and, you know, like, you know, I'm a talent guy. When I start talking about talent or, you know, this is Startup Pulse, my eyes will light up. You know, I feel so much energy coming into me. that, you know, this is the best thing that I could do today, you know? So unless that desire, the burning desire to be successful or taking the product somewhere or the platform somewhere is not there in the startup founder, then, you know, ideas are diamond, you know, ideas
Yeah, it's interesting you say all of that, you know, I mean, and just reflecting on some of the earlier comments and questions you've posed, you know, listen, all entrepreneurs, founders, by their very nature are optimistic, okay? You're always going to hear the most positive things and all the wins that they've had. But, you know, I flip it around, okay? I said, okay. And to me, you know, I don't get too stuck on their lack of business experience. I say, hey, you've got experience, whether as a student, as a child, or even doing summer jobs or working in the family business and all that. I say, okay, let's work through your experience. Then I'd put them on the spot and say, hey, okay, tell me the problems and challenges you had. I don't use the word problems. Tell me the challenges you had and explain to me how you dealt with it. Okay. All right. And it could be, you know, playing a particular sport, you know, and, you know, you weren't very athletic. Okay. But you had the desire to play sports and be competitive because your older brother or sister or your neighbors, I mean, your peers were, okay? And you wanted to get on the team. Well, what did you do to get on that football team, soccer team, or cricket team, or whatever, okay?
Right.
So I look, you know, assuming time permitting, I look for that. To me, it's more important how a founder and entrepreneur deals with problems and challenges, okay? Yeah, we can all celebrate their wins and success, but I want to know, to me, it's a test of character. It's also a test of entrepreneurship, okay? To me, all successful business people, entrepreneurs, founders, they're successful because they could deal with challenges and they manage challenges. I mean, everything is falling apart, but somehow they found a solution, okay?
Yeah.
And how they did it and all of that. So that's a critical thing to look for. It's not always clear or obvious. And you may find founders who are privileged, okay? And that, but that's something to look for because let's face it, everything is not a straight line. Everything doesn't go up, okay?
What would you like to, you know, say, for example, I start a founder listening to this podcast in Europe, in India, in the Middle East. What common thread you would like to give them when they are thinking of starting their startup or they have already started their journey? There has to be a commonality between, you know, even though there are three different geographies, but, you know, what a startup founder should certainly focus on so that they are successful in raising funds, they are successful in taking their company somewhere.
Okay, so what I would look for and that, and let me step back for a second, okay? To me, I try to find out what is it that gave them this idea, okay? And my experience dealing with entrepreneurs in early stage angel investing is there was a personal experience, okay? They're in their house, family matter, or the work that they did, or whatever. There's an experience. They saw a problem. They saw a challenge. Okay. It was consistent. It was ignored. So they said, okay, wait a minute. Nobody's dealing with this. And despite their screams and their role or whatever the company had, nobody was paying attention to it. And they said, okay, you know what? I'm going to give up whatever comforts of life I've had at that time. And I'm going to deal with this challenge and problem. So you want to hear that. Now, nothing wrong with somebody just middle of the night coming with a dream and saying, hey, I'm going to do this. And, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, they got a pitch deck ready and ready to, okay, wait a minute. That's just a dream. Nothing wrong with that. Okay. But to me, I want to see the connection to, hey, solving real life problems and issues. Okay. All right. Now, just because you had a problem with that or your perception of the enormity of the problem, does that translate into a business and a scalable business? You know, that's always the questions that are going to get asked and all of that. Okay. So the other thing that I look for consistently is validation. Okay. So now you've identified a problem, okay, that nobody's adhering to. And if you discuss the problem with enough people, they'll nod their heads. Yeah, I've experienced this. I've heard about this. I've seen this. But they never had the initiative to quit everything that they're doing and deal with it and launch a business. Okay. So you're looking for validation, okay? Okay. So validation of an idea, and to the extent that entrepreneurs can document it, the better, okay? Of course, the perfect validation is, hey, we're up and running. We got customers, you know, we got sales coming in, but we want to grow 100%. So now we're looking for capital to fuel that growth, okay? So because it's unfair in some cases in early stages of commercial, mass commercial validation. But hey, is your idea validated by independent third party, you know, non-family members and friends, okay?
All right. Yeah.
And nothing wrong with getting support from friends and family, okay? It's needed. It's crucial. So validation, you know, in Canada, we deal with a lot of healthcare, med tech companies and all that. And it's a long gestation period. You got regulatory hurdles and all of that. But at each stage, I look at it, or we look at it and say, hey, where's their validation? Did they get a grant? Did they get a support from a research institution or some very credible academia? And then saying, you know what? This is worth doing. Okay. So it's a form of validation. So that's what I look at. It's consistently proof that, yeah, there's a problem, there's a need, there's a demand. Okay. And then from that, you build a business case and then an investment case to raise investment capital. I mean, I'll leave everybody with a thought, okay? I mean, and I've been to many of these discussions with founders and entrepreneurs and all that, and they always brag about non-dilutive funding, okay? All right? Well, we got this grant from the government, or we got this thing from this and all of that. And, you know, and we should probably do a separate webinar or a session on this.
Sure.
What I'd like to say to founders is, you know, what is the best form of non-dilutive funding? Okay. The best. Okay. Customer. You have a customer that comes to you and says, hey, I've got a problem. I think you can solve it. Here's some money, a security deposit or whatever. Okay. You solve this. Okay. And by the way, there's more money and more business where this money is coming from. That is the best form of non-dilutive funding. When you got customers giving you money and say, hey, help me with this. Okay. All right. So why am I saying this? Always have customers in mind and that, okay? Be closer to customers, closer to the market. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And unfortunately, unfairly, we've been in an environment where there was too much capital available and founders raising capital. And yeah, okay, you know, a big name fund, a successful entrepreneur investing in backing them. That's success. Yeah, success in some ways. But you know what? That's not success. You haven't built a business yet. You know, do you have paying customers? Okay. Now, you may have got some investment to help you get there, but you're not there yet. But guess what, founders? You just take on another challenge. You've taken somebody's money and say, hey, and more or less tacitly agreed that, hey, you're going to deliver on what you said in your pitch deck, your projection, your business plan, and all of that. Okay? It's helpful, but there's no guarantee you're going to build a business. All right? So I'm not saying customers and investors it should be at odds, but focus on the customer. Focus on the market, the customer. You know, even if it's one customer, okay, it's a start, okay? Now, as opposed to, hey, we've got an idea, we need some money, then we'll go and talk to customers. Okay, well, that, I'm not sure the priority is right there, okay? So that's what we look for, okay? Who's been out in the battlefield talking to customers and all of that, okay? And even incur in their previous whatever, the wrath of customers, okay, who are unhappy with, you know, what's in the marketplace, you know. I mean, there lies the opportunity, okay? So having your customer give you money to solve and deliver a solution to them, I don't know how you could beat that.
And customer is king. Ultimately, doesn't matter how many millions you have raised through your series A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever. Unless you have paying customers, the customer is either going to make you or break you, you know.
Yeah,
funding is there. Other means of dilutive funding can come in, but, you know, ultimately, the product has to work. The market has to be there. And you should be constantly delivering value But then only money will come and, you know, customers will line up.
Okay. So I read some stories of some very successful companies and all that. I won't mention their names and that. But what struck me was, in this one case, the founder spent 90% of his time at customers' premises, you know, very sophisticated enterprise software. Okay? 90%, you know, commuted for, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours a day. Okay. And I won't tell you the specific geographies or whatever, but just think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So much of Intel you are picking up for free.
Okay. And what does that tell a customer? Okay, here's the founder, okay? All right, on our premises, okay? I mean, it doesn't really take up that much space, okay? Maybe he drinks a couple of cups of coffee or whatever, but is there, okay? You don't have to call a number or whatever. The person's there to ensure that there's a successful implementation and is right there to deal with any issues or whatever.
Yeah.
So, again, back to the customer. And it's... It, to me, any organization for that matter, okay, any industry for that matter, if you don't have that in your DNA, if it's not part of that culture of the company, okay, then think hard, okay? I'm not saying it can't be developed, but, you know, that's got to be the overwhelming thought process on building a business. Anyways.
So true. Great answer. You know, the customer is the best way for non-dilutive funding. It kept me thinking, you know, it truly makes sense. You know, this is something which, because ultimately, you know, why are you doing a startup? You know, you have to help customers. And if the customers are with you from day one, from the idea stage itself, then the success is almost guaranteed. That, you know, there is a buyer who is going to use my services, you know. So great thought. Thank you for that. Founder versus co-founder, what do you see in the startups?
Okay, so founder versus co-founders, you know, it's interesting. You know, I had a discussion with one of my investments this morning, the founder, okay, and we have a monthly call, okay, besides the electronic updates I get from and that, you know, and in this particular situation, you know, the key founder, you know, when I first met the founder, you know, owned, I'd say, more than 95% of the company. And then they took on another founder and they had, you know, less than 1% of equity. And my standard question is, well, how are you getting along with this other founder? And the founder explained to me, okay, there's various structures in place and all of that, that this other person, although to the outside world, the title, the label is co-founder. But if you look at pure equity interest, you know, it's weighed against the original founder and another. But it's the way this person handled this person and how they work, interact, and all of that. So I asked him, you know, it's more than a year since they took on. So I look at the relationships, okay, mm-hmm. and the dynamics, okay. It's only, I mean, not only their interaction on building the company and business, but are their complementary skill sets, okay, and that. And do they resolve issues or disagreements behind closed doors before it erupts at the board level or out to some of the investors? And by the way, I've seen everything, okay? I've been involved in situations where, you know, unfortunately, we've had to let some founders, okay, you know, show them the exit door, you know, somewhat mm-hmm. amicably, but it's not the thing that you as an investor or an early investor want to get involved. So I look for the dynamics, okay? I look for the chemistry, okay? And I see over a period of time, is there a mutual respect? You know, listen, a lot of founders, individuals, dominant personalities, you know, larger than life, okay?
Yeah.
But the reality is they're going to need a team to go build them. They can't do everything themselves. There's only 24 hours in the day. But it's how they work with the team and how they treat them, okay? In this particular situation, I've seen other situations, they treat them as founders. You know, people don't, it's their day-to-day interaction, okay, on coming up with new ideas, pricing models, whatever. You know, there's an active involvement of a team, okay? And so I look for those dynamics, okay? But then I also look for, potential trouble, okay, red flags, okay? Because, you know, high-paced growth, success brings issues, people issues. You know, wait a minute. You know, and what I find with a lot of companies is there's a lot of unwritten or not fully documented arrangements. Okay. And I was dealing with another colleague several months ago, you know, and the person left a very good situation and joined this company on the idea that, hey, over a period of time, you know, there were certain milestones the person had to meet and they'll earn a certain amount of equity. And the person approaches and says, Mahendra, we talked about it. I was promised that, but nothing was documented. I said, well, okay. And then, you know, we came up with a number of ways to deal with it and all of that. Okay. So it's very important to document things. And, you know, you don't expect founders who are fast moving and somebody who don't come from a structured big corporate environment to document everything. But I can tell you, if you don't have a basic documentation and understanding, and definitely when investors come in, okay, then, you know, it could create problems or issues. Yeah. And invariably, investors have to pick sides, and it doesn't become very very good to deal with, okay? And to me, it's, now, there's documentation, but there's also expectations, okay? You know, people who join companies at an early stage, they're given the sort of the founder cachet, and quite frankly, their role and involvement and the sweat that they put in is equivalent or tantamount to being a founder, okay? But then when the original founder has a large equity, even though it gets diluted by financings and all that, the success also creates, you know, it's human nature, jealousy and all of that. So me as an investor look at it and I said, okay, this person's coming in at this. You know, what do you expect of that? I mean, if they hit this, are they going to earn certain equity? Okay, you know, they may get initial equity, they may put in some money, and because of their track record experience, they may get equity, they don't have to put up a lot of money, but are they going to earn their way to a meaningful equity? Somewhat, a lot of it tied to the success, not necessarily tenure, but success and milestones and all of that, okay?
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where the original founder takes all the credit and benefits financially, and when things go wrong, you know, the rest of the team takes all the blame, okay? And I've seen in those situations and that. So as an investor, you want to see that as a balance, okay? And again, it's a continuous process, okay? You know, you can evaluate as part of your diligence at the time of investment, okay? But it's a continuous evaluation and assessment. And, you know, in some cases, if you see inequity in the team sharing, then you bring that to the table, okay? And in some cases, we've had to, you know, we also get diluted. Okay, you know what? The 10% of standard 10% of equity is for the option pool. Well, wait a minute. You know, maybe it should be 15 or 20%, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listen, as an investor, I don't have an issue being diluted. You know, if I'm getting diluted, that usually means the company is worth more. My dollar investment is worth more, okay? Okay, my financial value of my investment is worth more, okay? And if you don't pay attention to that, okay, then it could be highly disruptive. And quite frankly, in some cases, fatal, okay? When you have a core team and a disagreement, okay? And to me, how are you going to retain these? Because a number of these people are highly employable, especially people with tech background and all that, highly employable, okay? And you know, the fundamental question is, okay, what's your retention point? What's the hook that you keep them motivated, okay? And usually it's ownership stake, and more importantly, or just as important, feeling like they're the owner, they're the founder.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. So share credit, share successes, also share failures, take on joint responsibility if things didn't work out, you know?
What do you think of the role of a mentor and or an advisor in the life of a startup founder?
Okay, I think it's very important and critical, okay? First of all, you know, there's got to be a connection between the two parties, okay? There's no point in, you know, I could have all the world's experience and all of that, but if a founder doesn't listen to me, then it's not going to be effective. You know, in some cases, by virtue of the investment, there's got to be an advisor or a board of advisor or whatever in that. And you know, if the founders go through a motion of yeah, but doesn't listen, okay, that's not effective, okay? So it's very important, okay? And my advice to founders and entrepreneurs is, yeah, always work with the right advice and all that. And a lot of the investment proposals that I see and the ones that I've made, I usually see a group of advisors. You know, somewhere along their journey, these people were sound advisors. Now, they may not have the financial means or all the business connections to help their business, but yet there were individuals that they can count on and be transparent about it and full disclosure. Okay. So I look for that open transparency and communication. Okay. I go back to what I may have said earlier. You know, when I deal as a mentor advisor, okay, tell me the problems first. And I don't like the word problem. Tell me the challenges first. You know, you're having trouble hiring a CTO. Okay. Your CFO, you know, doesn't do their job. Okay. I want to know that first. So then I said, okay, let's go through it. How can I help you? I may not be able to help you, but I know somebody who can. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And then we talk about, hey, where are the wins? Where are the successes? Okay. And that. So it's that strong bonding, strong relationship. Okay. And also, you know, you don't want to call out entrepreneurs and even entrepreneurs not calling out on the mentors and advisors, because today you got too much media, social media and all that. Okay. Anything that you say gets recorded. Okay. So, you know, respect privacy, you know, transparency and openness does not mean that everything gets posted on every platform. Okay. Okay. Behind closed doors, you know, be open and all that. Okay. I have a far greater respect for a founder and entrepreneur who's upfront and tells me all the problems and challenges. Okay. All right. Now, in some cases, as a mentor and advisor, you know, there's also a sort of a paternalistic figure, okay, that you play, you know, role that you play. And sometimes I'm very clear with the companies I'm involved with. Don't look at me as your dad, or your uncle, or that, okay? You know, I'm here, okay? So if you can't, you know, if you're not going to listen to me and take the strong medicine that sometimes I have to dispense, okay, then maybe there's not a fit, and maybe we should look at somebody else who could be a better fit, you know, more. You know, and sometimes a lot of this comes with domain knowledge and expertise. Okay. You know, I'm not going to be a mentor and advisor to a company that's very deep in technology and all that. Yeah, I've got a good general business sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, this is where, you know what, I'll get somebody else in because they'll be more credible. The conversation, the interaction between mentor, advisor, however you want to term it or describe it, will be more productive because there's mutual respect. And it's important that mentor and advisors from an entrepreneur's perspective, it's got to be beyond their financial investment. Okay.
Yeah.
And I've been involved in both sides, situations where, hey, I don't want your money, but I want your time. Okay. Your time is more valuable to me. Okay. All right.
Gotcha.
Okay. So now that, I mean, there's no perfect formula for this. There's no perfect prescription for this. Okay. It's intuitive and that comes through the diligence process and that, okay. But I think they're very important, okay. Even if companies and founders have sufficient capital and they can employ or deploy that capital to get the requisite expertise, to me, nothing beats a mentor or an advisor that's closer to the founder, okay. You need that sounding board, okay.
So true. And I have experienced that, and it helps a lot. You know, at times you get mental fog. And if you have a sounding board, as you said, it clears your thought. It tells you that, you know, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would even go further. Even though you have all the business experience, you know, in certain areas you don't have, even if you do, you want to bring in other advisors and other voices, okay?
Yeah.
Not that they have the authority to make decisions, but it's worth listening to them. Okay.
Yeah. It is like a second opinion. You know, if you're sick, you go to a doctor, and then, you know, you go to another doctor to get a second opinion. So
yeah. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's got to be discipline about it. Okay. And, you know, it's a two-way street. You know, I don't, you know, if the entrepreneurs and founders sort of say, hey, I'm only doing this because I have to, because that's what the investment agreement says. That's not, no. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Respect the agreement that you signed, but go beyond that. Okay. All right.
Yeah. How do you guide startup founders on valuation? You know,
okay.
Many a times I hear stories that, you know, I'm in EdTech and EdTech is very hot. This is why my valuation is this.
Yeah.
Or same with med devices. You know. So yeah. How do you?
I'd say be realistic. Okay. I'd say be realistic. Okay. You know, if you're going to, you know, and there have been times in the last number of years, you know, you've got an environment where, you know, you can play the card of FOMO, fear of missing out, okay? All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And there's too much capital chasing ideas and all that, okay? But that's very brief. You know, that those periods are not sustainable, okay? So be realistic, okay? So what I would suggest and look at is, okay, be realistic, but also build in an upside. Okay. So, you know, and I've been on both sides, you know, I've been involved with, you know, companies that were raising money and also been involved in looking at investing. Okay. And I said, okay, if you think it's worth this much, I'll tell you what, you think it's worth this much based on your business plan, your projections and all of that. Okay. Guess what? Let's start off with here. And by the way, you can earn the added valuation or value. Okay, and you can structure it a lot of different ways if you deliver on this. Okay. Okay, right now maybe you're giving up 10% of the company, but if you hit this, and this, you can get back, you can earn back 5% of the company. So I would tie some of the valuation discussions to actual performance and delivery. Okay. Yeah. The market is hot, it's frothy and all that. You can look at all of that, but then you can, you know, it's easy to read headlines and follow that, but understand the circumstances and how it came about. In a lot of cases, you don't know what other factors were involved in deciding this company doing this and all that. You know, sometimes it's not open. Sometimes there's key investors involved and they've got certain rights, okay? And they place value on those rights, okay? You know, I was listening to a pitch a couple of weeks ago at another angel investment meeting. It was healthcare related, you know, a university and their research, a hospital network and their research came up with this idea. And I said, okay, and they licensed it. Okay, well, they mentioned it in the pitch. I said, okay, well, let's fully understand what's involved there, okay? And what rights do they have to that IP that you're deploying, okay? And taking it to the market and all of that, okay?
Yeah.
So sometimes when you got strategic investors involved, valuation comes into play, okay? That a non-strategic investor will not fully understand and appreciate, but have to go on and follow on. But that's a call that investors have to make. You got XYZ company, which is a big company, they put an X and this is the valuation, but you don't know, hey, besides the financial investment, all the different rights, including development rights, different application that they're gonna get, that drove that valuation. I mean, they virtually got a monopoly or first right on a number of things. And then you as an investor have to follow on that. You don't have those rights. You don't have, you'll benefit from it in some ways, but it's hard to grapple. So my advice is, okay, listen, you face the risk of not getting any investment because if you're stuck on valuation, okay,
mm-hmm.
right?
And
what I'm seeing, and I would say in the last 6 months, you know, including one about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I mean, great presenter, founder and all of that, okay? And then the founder had to leave the room and a number of us, the first question blurted out was, the valuation is ridiculous, okay? I mean, didn't even get into what they've done, what they've built, okay? All right? Didn't have any customers. No customer was paying them, okay? Great presenter, good knowledge of the market and understanding. But what came out, and you know, it'd be a challenge for them to get that valuation, you know, let alone go through the due diligence process and all of that. So a high valuation is usually a deterrent, okay? of getting an investment, you know. So to me, hey, listen, you approached us, whether it's a group of investors or angel investor club or whatever, and you want to raise money. So you're looking for money. But because your high expectations of valuation, you know, if that's going to get in the way, then you're not going to get anything. Okay. So be realistic. Be realistic about it. Okay. Be open about it. Okay. You know, I usually suggest to entrepreneurs a range. Okay. All right. Which is plausible. Okay. All right. And then if they want to get into the due diligence and detailed discussions about investment terms and all that, then you can bring it out. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. But not at the initial pitch. Okay. Because, you know, you won't go to the proverbial next step. Okay.
Yeah.
But if they go to the detailed due diligence and, you know, you give them exposure to the customers you have in the pipeline and all that, not all, some investors will come around to that number. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A little ambitious, but they've done a lot of work, which was not that obvious in the 15-page deck. Okay. So, okay. So fundamentally be open to it. Don't be stuck on it. Okay. And that. Now, you also have to understand the cap table. Sometimes, you know, you've got some investors that are on the cap table. You know, there's certain anti-dilution rights and other rights, okay? If the next funding isn't at this level, then it gets, you know, not only are they going to get diluted down from the new money coming in, they could get diluted down by the existing investors, okay? But that also is a red flag. So wait a minute. You know, you sold something to a previous, an existing investor, and you didn't deliver, okay? And you're saying the valuation. Okay, well, okay. What's behind that number? What's behind the valuation? What are you supposed to do? Okay.
Thank you.
So,
thank you so much.
In a lot of ways, you know, for investors, believe me, it's easy to say no. You know, we say no more times than say yes, right?
Yeah.
No only has two letters. Yes has three. So it's easy to use two letters than three letters, right?
Any closing thoughts for startup founders and entrepreneurs?
You know what? I would say this is a great time and an opportunity to launch a business and build your business, okay? A bit of realism is playing into play. You're not playing the frothiness of all kinds of money being out there and all that, okay? And if you can build a business in challenging times, including raising capital, all that, you know, you're going to come out as very successful. And let me be very clear. I've never seen an environment, you know, whether it's in North America or India or other places, where entrepreneurship, early stage companies, startups are looked at it positively. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. It's no longer, viewed as, hey, this is not a good career choice or whatever. Okay. And in some parts, it's actually embraced. Okay. And I'll tell you, aside from my age and years of experience, I'm enthusiastic about what I see and what I hear. Okay. The ideas, and I'm blown away by the diversity in gender and ethnicity. Okay. So I'm way past, hey, oh, I didn't know you were a female. Okay. Sorry to say it that way, but hey, it's the ideas that they come up with, the opportunities and all that. So I see systems and supports, investors, more of them, and getting more developed. Okay. To me, there's definitely, in the investment parlance or language or lingo, there is an asset class for angel investing in early stage. Okay. There definitely is room and scope. And I urge all founders to seek that out. Okay. It's the most critical. Okay. Yeah. You'll get big names after, but believe me, the ones that are critical to the success of your business are angel investors. Okay.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mahendra, for taking time out to come to Startup Pulse on the Investor Spotlight. I appreciate your effort of giving me time. And you brought so many good points. And, you know, we will be releasing this podcast very, very soon. I would also like to invite you in one of, maybe sometime in January or February, when we do, pitching masterclass.
Right, sure.
So startup founders will come, they will present on Zoom without any presentation, just, a 2-minute pitch. And then we give them a critical feedback. so that they do better when they are in front of investor for their funding rounds.
Okay. So let me leave you everybody with this thought, okay?
Sure.
You know, angel investors, you know, provide capital and it's needed by the founders, but it's also helpful to angel investors. You know, I look at it two ways. I also learn a lot, okay? All right. And, you know, I would never say that I've stopped learning, okay? All right. And with the emerging technologies and processes and all of that, it's fascinating, okay? So aside from the number of years on this earth, I'm still very young at heart and in my mind. So again, okay, look forward to all the great ideas, opportunities that founders bring, irrespective of how old they are, okay? So it's a collaborative, very engaging experience and time. So I urge more investors, angel or otherwise, to pay attention to these founders and entrepreneurs.
Okay? Thank you so much. Truly appreciate talking to you. And we will get you back in coming weeks for another round, or keep continuing the dialogue with you. And we'll certainly invite you as a judge to our pitching masterclass. So with that,
thank you very much. Delighted to participate. And again, great job, Anshuman, and your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Mahendra. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.